This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you had a good Easter celebration for those of you who are Christians, and for those who are not, hope you had a great weekend and glad you are with us. And your number is 877-217-5757. And Talk Louisiana signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. We have some ground to cover with our two guests in studio, Susan East Nelson, the former communications director for the Louisiana Democratic Party, and Tom Aswell, publisher of Louisiana Voice. And we will get to the LSU situation, which is the gift that keeps giving for journalists, and there is a hearing Thursday at the Capitol. A legislative panel has invited 10 members of the LSU family to be there, and the prospective list of those to testify includes the name of Edward, actually listed as Eduardo James Orgeron. So it's going to be an interesting week on that front, and we'll talk about what's happening right now. But there is a congressional race going on in our state right now. 19 days from now, we'll vote. If you're in the 2nd District, we'll vote, but the whole state will be following the race between Troy Carter and Karen Carter-Peterson. And Tom Aswell produced a story a few days ago indicating that Karen Carter-Peterson missed 85% of her votes last year and still received her per diem for showing up to work. So, Tom, is that a deal breaker for you, or are you just reporting the news? What do you think?
You're asking me to take sides. No, I'm just reporting what's out there. I think missing that many votes and collecting a per diem is a pretty serious transgression on our part. I think she shouldn't collect a per diem if she's not there.
Well, you broke the story, and the Advocate reported it yesterday, and I'll give the Advocate credit. They acknowledge that you were the person who
Tyler Bridges called and interviewed me.
Well, very good. Yeah. Well, today, the Advocate, in a story by the aforementioned Mr. Bridges, the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, he says Troy Carter missed a deadline to file his personal financial disclosure report as a candidate in his race. He has filed the form and paid a $200 penalty, but is that analogous to what you're accusing
Absolutely.
Carter of doing?
In fact, I think $200 is getting off cheap.
Yeah.
I think the fines for these infractions should be much stiffer.
Well, Karen Carter-Peterson, Susan East Nelson, does have the endorsement of Gary Chambers, who finished third in the race.
He does.
And Chambers beat her in New Orleans. Could this perhaps enable her to move up, since she did finish a distant second to Troy Carter?
Yeah, I think at this point it's largely a numbers game. You know, I was really impressed by Gary's numbers in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not from New Orleans.
He beat her in New
Orleans.
Yeah,
and, you know, I think that says something about Gary's political operation.
Well, he's become quite a player, and remember, he lost the Senate race decisively to Regina Barrow. And so he is, at the age of 34, I think he is a person who's going to be around for a while, and a very articulate man, as we know. And he has endorsed Karen Carter-Peterson. Now, Troy Carter is endorsed by the person who held the position before him, Cedric Richmond. And Cedric Richmond was a popular congressman, Tom Aswell. And I think Troy Carter has to be, at this point, considered to be the favorite in the race.
I would think so. Well, that's a heavy hitter to have the endorsement of Cedric Richmond, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, a listener asked about Julia Letlow. She won the 5th District race without a runoff, succeeding her late husband, who was set to take office and died a few days before he would have taken the oath to succeed Ralph Abraham. And Julia Letlow is a new congressperson, Dr. Letlow. Good to have a woman in Congress in the U.S. House, and I think the first woman in the U.S. House.
First Republican woman.
No, first woman since Lindy Boggs.
Oh, since Lindy Boggs, yeah.
And Mary Landrieu was in the Senate.
Right.
So that's good, but to this point, Julia Letlow, to my knowledge, hasn't said that Joe Biden won the election fair and square. Should she come forward and say that?
If someone asked her point blank, yeah, I think she should, but I don't think it's necessary that she make an issue of it at this point. I think that's pretty much acknowledged that Joe Biden won the election.
Acknowledged by you, but not acknowledged by Garrett Graves, not who voted to negate the
Garrett
election.
Garrett Graves should be ashamed of himself.
Not acknowledged by Steve Scalise.
Well, what do you expect from Steve Scalise?
Acknowledged by Mike Johnson. Same. Not acknowledged by Clay Higgins.
Well, Clay Higgins doesn't know.
And not acknowledged by John Neely Kennedy.
Well, same thing. Well, John Kennedy and Clay Higgins are two of a kind.
In what way?
Idiots.
Well, Kennedy has massive degrees.
I don't care.
Clay Higgins doesn't even have a college degree.
Yeah, I would say John Kennedy is not an idiot. I mean, he's a very learned person. He's, you know, he was a Rhodes Scholar.
He was not a Rhodes Scholar.
He
went to Oxford. He was not a Rhodes Scholar.
He talks like Foghorn Leghorn.
I think that's a persona that he has adopted.
It seems to be working pretty well for him, Tom.
I don't know. He's getting a lot of ridicule.
Especially in your home parish of Lincoln. He seems to be tearing it up there, this guy from Madisonville, by way of Centerville, Mississippi, where he was born. By the way, we have two U.S. senators who were not born in the state of Louisiana. How about that? We're one of the few states,
Ted Cruz wasn't born in Texas. Huh?
No, but I think the other guy was, John Cornyn.
John Cornyn was definitely born in Texas.
To have two senators who are not Louisiana natives, what does that say? Maybe we're open-minded. What do you think? All right.
It just makes me ask, is that the best we have to offer in this
state?
Well,
why hasn't Scalise, why hasn't Johnson, why hasn't Higgins, why hasn't Kennedy, why hasn't Graves, why haven't the all five of them said, look, and Julia Letlow, for that matter, said, Joe Biden won fair and square, and we may not like him as president, but he beat the tar out of Donald Trump, whipped him like a dog. Beat him by 7 million votes. Here's Mitch, I can't bench press my weight, McConnell talking about it and saying that the president, the former one, caused the insurrection, and we're 3 months away from the unfortunate anniversary of that incident, but here is Mitch McConnell.
The majority leader, McConnell.
Well, I agree.
The majority leader and the Democratic leader be allowed
to
speak, and that the time not count against 2 hours of debate in relation to the objection raised on the state of Arizona.
Is there objection? Without objection, so ordered.
I want to say to the American people, the United States Senate will not be intimidated. We will not be kept out of this chamber by thugs, mobs, or threats. We will not bow to lawlessness or intimidation. We are back at our posts. We will discharge our duty under the Constitution and for our nation. And we're going to do it tonight. This afternoon, Congress began the process of honoring the will of the American people and counting the Electoral College votes. We fulfill this solemn duty every 4 years for more than two centuries. Whether our nation's been at war or at peace, under all manner of threats, even during an ongoing armed rebellion and the Civil War, the clockwork of our democracy has carried on. The United States and the United States Congress have faced down much greater threats than the unhinged crowd we saw today. We've never been deterred before and will be not deterred today.
That's Mitch McConnell, and of course, a few days after that, on January 19th, he laid the blame right at the president at that time's feet, Donald John Trump, and said that Trump was doing this in response to an election he lost.
Yep.
He lost it. Why can't John Kennedy say that? Why can't
Very good
he
question.
Say those words?
Very good question.
Well,
I think
you
they
think
should.
It'll ever happen?
Probably not.
No?
Probably not.
Well, I think Foster Campbell should say he didn't lose the race to John Kennedy. If Kennedy's going to, because Campbell, as far as total votes, ran much closer to Kennedy than did...
That's a valid analogy.
...than did Donald Trump to Joe Biden. So Susan Nelson, is it time to put all this aside and get on to the business of the country, or is this a residual problem that many people, of course, do not accept Joe Biden as president, even though they should? He won the election. He beat Donald Trump by about the same margin that George Bush beat Michael Dukakis. And I didn't see Dukakis saying voter fraud, voter fraud, voter fraud. He would have been put in a straitjacket if he had said that. So why can't Kennedy say fair and square?
When I was a consultant, we had a very joking poster that said, if you can't be part of the solution, there's plenty of money to be made in prolonging the problem. And, I think there's plenty of money to be made in prolonging the lie and getting people up. You've got Newsmax. You've got America One. All of those places are places where they're continuing to make money by furthering this notion.
All right. Well, we'll talk about a money-making scheme the president, Donald Trump, had in the last days of his campaign when we return after this brief time out of 90 seconds on Talk Louisiana. More with Susan and Tom. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Katie Ann McDonald is producing, and Susan East Nelson and Tom Aswell are in studio to reflect on the world at large, locally and beyond, from Baton Rouge to the Beltway. And a story yesterday that was front page in the Sunday New York Times starts this way. Stacey Blatt was in hospice care last September, listening to Rush Limbaugh's dire warnings about how badly Donald Trump's campaign needed money when he went online, chipped in everything he could, $500. It was a big sum for a 63-year-old battling cancer and living in Kansas City on less than $1,000 a month. But that single contribution, federal records show, it was his first ever, quickly multiplied over another $500 was withdrawn the next day, then $500 the next week, and every week through mid-October without his knowledge, until Mr. Blatt's bank account had been depleted and frozen. When his utility and rent payments bounced, he called his brother for help. When the Blatts soon discovered that $3,000 in withdrawals from the Trump campaign were taken in 30 days, they called their bank and said they thought they were victims of fraud. But this is a case in which it was an intentional scheme to boost revenues by the Trump campaign, and the for-profit company that processed its online donations, WinRed, facing a cash crunch and getting badly outspent by the Democrats, the campaign it quietly begun in September to set up recurring donations by default for online donors for every week until the election. And then, in the final 2.5 months of the 2020 campaign, of the year of 2020, the Trump campaign, the Republican National Committee, and their shared accounts issued more than 530,000 refunds worth $64.3 million to online donors. So they tried to undo the damage, but of course some people had their utilities cut off, probably got evicted from their homes, and this was a scheme that was nefarious. Now, obviously, I don't think anybody's going to say that it wasn't a poorly done thing to help a campaign, but a bigger question, Susan, is when Citizens United became the law of the land by virtue of the Supreme Court decision, many thought Democrats would be the ones who were outspent. Now it's Republicans who are outspent. So Citizens United actually helped the Democratic Party. What do you think?
I mean, I think money is, I mean, I disagree. Money is not speech. I think we have issues with all of this money, and it needs to be better tracked. I think we need holistic campaign reform in this country. But, you know, the fact that Democrats have seized upon the opportunity to turn the tide. I mean, they're just doing what any good electoral person would do in this type of situation.
And now it takes a few billion dollars to run a presidential campaign, Tom, as well. Certainly you can't do it on the cheap. And as rich as Donald Trump says he's worth $10 billion, he wouldn't want to spend $2 billion on his campaign, I don't think.
I read that story last night, and that's just absolutely outrageous. He should go to jail for that. I really feel that way. That's criminal.
Was it him or was it his campaign?
He knew what was going on. Well, don't kid yourself. He knows where every nuance of that campaign finance is going. He knows.
Well, yeah. We do these things online all the time, though, where you end up getting charged numerous times until you tell them to stop, but usually it's not for amounts that are going to put you not only out of business, but out of commission.
No, I had Sports Illustrated try that same scam on me one time, and I stopped my subscription. I was able to stop it. But that's peanuts. A Sports Illustrated contribution is peanuts to what this is.
Victor Amelino, a 78-year-old Californian, made a $990 donation to Mr. Trump in early September via WinRed, the New York Times reports. It occurred seven more times, adding up to almost $8,000. I'm retired. I can't afford to pay all that damn money.
Some of them were doubled. The contributions were doubled involuntarily.
Well, but Susan, you were in the fundraising business when you were working for the Democratic Party. Were unusual ways taken at that time to raise money?
No, this was 2002. The technology was not nearly what it is.
That was so 2002.
Today.
And
like
I remember
20 years ago.
Here you got Rodney Alexander elected as a Democrat.
Yep.
And the thanks you got, Susan Nelson, was he went to Washington and promptly changed parties, something he said he would never do.
He did serve his term for 2 years and then change party.
Okay.
So in fairness, he was 2 years as a Democrat in that.
It's like Sid Gotra was elected sheriff and then changed parties and won with the political machine of Kip Holden, beat Greg Ferries as a Democrat, and then he became a Republican.
Didn't Buddy Romer do that too?
It's a numbers game.
Buddy Romer did it, but I don't think he ran as a traditional Democrat.
No.
Yeah. He didn't use the Democratic machine to beat Edwin Edwards. Edwards had the machine.
Sure.
Yeah. That's why he changed, because he knew the machine was not in his camp.
Right.
But some of these others, they took advantage, and Rodney Alexander won by a scintilla over Lee Fletcher.
Yeah, that was a very close race in 2002.
And poor Lee Fletcher, I think because of what Alexander did, Fletcher at least was honest, and then he ended up dying a young man.
Yeah.
But that's politics, some say. It's not a business that brings out the best in people, is it?
Not for the faint of heart.
Well, and I mean, it's just like any other business. You look at the trends. I mean, I hate to say this, but I'd love to be altruistic and think that there are politicians that really believe what they stand for and everything else. It's great, but I've been in politics for a long time, and it's like a business. You look where the trends are going, mm-hmm. and you take your business there, and that's how you win.
I mean, well, I'm told by people who know that Donald Trump, with two other governors in the same room, asked John Bel Edwards to switch parties about a year before he ran for re-election. And he said he would clear the field for him, that he would win by acclamation, which he probably would have. The Democrats didn't have anybody to ramp up and run a campaign against him. He could have run as a Republican and won going away, but yet he stayed a Democrat, and he won by 40,000 votes over a relatively weak candidate, a person who'd never run for office before. So in this case, there's a politician who didn't take the easy way out.
But it took a lot of work to get that runoff through, and it took a lot of organization on the ground. I think Ashley Shelton with the Power Coalition did an amazing amount of work to get
it. And I don't think she got him elected governor.
I don't think any of that would have happened, he would not have won had not all of that taken place, because that's where the
if he had run as a Republican, he would have gotten 60% of the votes, probably.
I mean,
in this state, probably so.
Easily.
877-217-5757, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, and happy Easter to everybody. I hope you had a great weekend. I'm thing that we're really all being played. I mean, if you look at the right media and left media, basically their message is contempt for the other side.
All right. What about the Fox News and now its liberal counterpart, MSNBC? Are they presenting a balanced view of the world? Tom?
He's probably right, especially Fox. But it's gotten very contentious, and there's both sides are opposite each other, just screaming at the top of their lungs, and it's hard to overcome all the white noise.
Well,
yeah, and I think part of the issue here is the attention span of the American public, because we have this 24-hour news, right? So they need a soundbite, and the old saying in politics used to be that you campaigned in poetry and you governed in prose. Well, now it's like we campaign in tweets, and I think we govern in like burps at this point. I mean, it's like we don't, you know, because nobody can understand. So you've got all these unnuanced people in the political space, and there is no coming together on issues. There is no,
there's no time to discuss issues.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to talk about what's happening in the great state of Georgia. Major League Baseball has pulled out of its All-Star game as a result of a restrictive voting law that was signed by the governor. Texas has also swung into action with a law that is not quite as restrictive, but extremely restrictive, and it hasn't been signed. But is this an appropriate way to take action amid the attempt, obviously, to discourage voting, which most people in our country believe we should be encouraging? But last time in the last election, Donald Trump got a record for a Republican, 75 million votes or thereabouts, and Joe Biden got the all-time record, 82 million, and a rout, a landslide win. And we'll talk more after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Some major U.S. companies are talking about boycotting in Georgia. Executives across the United States are calling out efforts to restrict voting access after the governor in the Peach State, Brian Kemp, signed a law that opponents say would disproportionately disenfranchise people of color. Among the overhaul of state elections, the bill includes a restriction on drop boxes, makes it a crime to avoid to provide, rather, food or water to voters lined up outside polling stations. It requires mandatory proof of identity for absentee voting and creates greater legislative control over how elections are run. It's one of many Republican-backed election efforts introduced across the country after President Trump and other GOP members falsely claim that last year's election was due to fraud. So there we are, and Major League Baseball has said no All-Star game in Georgia. Others are saying that they may pull out. There was even talk that the Masters might be moved, Tom, as well.
I don't know where they would move it.
Well, maybe they'd move it to the Baton Rouge Country Club.
Maybe so.
Maybe so. Get closer to that microphone.
But they're not going to move it. They're not going to move the I read online just this morning that when sports gets into politics, it does get some blowback. They said about a ratio of 3-1, people leave sports when they get political. As opposed to people who are attracted to sports for that same reason. So they said this could backfire on Major League Baseball.
It could. But then again, sometimes, as we just discussed, if you have to do the right thing or what
you
think is the right thing.
That's correct.
So Georgia is the only state in the SEC of the 11 states to have voted against Donald Trump and did so once by the scantest of margins. Other than that, Trump was 21-1. In the Southeastern Conference, two wins in Louisiana, the last time by almost 400,000 votes, 399,000 votes and change, despite the fact that he lost in Baton Rouge and New Orleans collectively by about 200,000 votes. Yep. So Donald Trump, when you take out Baton Rouge and New Orleans, he got, you take out those two cities, he got over 80.
Did he lose in Caddo, too?
He did lose in Caddo, but it was much closer.
Right.
But he got about 85% of the white vote in Louisiana. 83, I think, is the final total, including the two markets where some white liberals like Tom Aswell live. So Donald Trump is he is the king of kings in Louisiana. So maybe that explains why Graves and Scalise and Johnson and Higgins and Kennedy are on his side.
Maybe so. But you just said sometimes you have to do what's right, and I wish they would. But that's...
They all voted to negate the election, but William Morgan Cassidy did not, Susan East Nelson.
Yeah, you know, Senator Cassidy, he took a stand, and I think it's something that, you know, a lot of people applauded him for. I will say this, that obviously your numbers on Trump indicate why there's been several pieces of legislation filed this session that's coming up. The pre-filing was Friday. One, there's a bill to ban ballot drop boxes in Louisiana, and we don't even have ballot drop boxes in Louisiana. So it's like you can tell that obviously that flavor is continuing.
A preemptive strike.
A preemptive strike, right? on this legislation that's already been filed for this upcoming session.
All right, 877-217-5757. Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning, Patrick.
Hey, good morning. So, you know, for like 3 years, we heard about the Russian collusion, and to me, it never seemed like a plausible theory, but we had an investigation. We had the Mueller team. They looked into it, like 3 years, real tough investigation to see if anything was there. Why can't they at least do the same thing here? Because this seems plausible. They just flipped a few counties and a few states and were able to get those states to flip too. And I'm not saying it happened, but we haven't really had an investigation, and I'd like to see an investigation.
We have had investigations in every one of those states, and no state in the election was close.
We had an investigation of Benghazi, too, that lasted quite a while.
Yeah, but the collusion with Russia was not proved to be wrong. It was an attorney general carrying the water for the president at the time.
That's correct.
And there was cooperation. You may not want to call it collusion, but obviously there's some reason why President Trump has never uttered an unkind word about the killer, the man who likes poison for his enemies, Vladimir Putin, who struts around like a tough guy with his shirt off, and he's not. 877-217-5757. Let's go to David in Atlanta.
You know, I'll tell you how bad things are getting with the Trump crazies. I have recordings of people calling hate talk stations, calling for Nancy Pelosi to be killed, and for the President of the United States, the caller says, quote, "I would like to put Biden up against a wall and shoot him."
All right. Now, which stations are you talking about?
I would love to say it.
Well, you can say it.
Jim, you know who I am. If anybody wants to contact me, give them my number, and I will play the recording.
Well, I want to know what stations. I'm asking you to put up or shut up, David, in Atlanta.
Okay, it's WJSO AM 990 in New Orleans.
Okay, you said
it. And it's hosted by the former executive director of the Louisiana Republican Party, Jeff Currier.
Okay, well, hopefully Mr. Currier.
And my name is David Bellinger. Anybody is free to contact me if they wish to hear it.
Okay, well, I hope Mr. Currier will come on this show. I would love that.
Now, may I state the purpose of my call?
Certainly. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and by the way, I live in a heavily Democratic African-American area in Atlanta, and the voting precinct where I used to vote has been closed. You know, yesterday on one of the talk stations, one of the Sunday morning talk stations, the Republican governor of Mississippi is on, and he supports the infrastructure proposals by President Biden, but he doesn't support the tax increases. When the host asked him how would he pay for it, he said he'd grow the economy the way Trump did with tax cuts, when in fact the tax cuts caused the economy to lose revenue and it added $3 trillion to the deficit. The Republicans are out of control and they're crazy.
All right. Well,
don't sugarcoat it, David.
Tax cuts do cause huge deficits, but all the money Joe Biden's spending is going to cause huge deficits too. Doesn't seem like either party has the stomach to address the debt, which is approaching what $20 trillion.
$20 trillion, yeah.
Yeah. So when do we say look, enough is enough?
It's it's a good question. We're in a situation right now, a lose-lose situation.
I apologize. The U.S. national debt, and you can go to the debt clock and see the dollars go by the second. It's now $28 trillion.
Wow.
$28 trillion. Dollars. And if we calculated that for every citizen in the United States, every living person, 330 million people, that means per person, $85,164 a person.
Correct.
That we're in debt as a country.
Well, Franklin Roosevelt spent a lot of money, and it pulled us out of the Depression. So sometimes
you have to do that,
yep.
And the pandemic is one of those times. But that's one time when the Republicans may have had a point that we can't spend ourselves into oblivion. And but the same ones voted willingly, Susan, for the Trump stimulus, and then they weren't for the Biden stimulus.
Sure.
So there was a disconnect there.
There was definitely a disconnect, and I will say, of course, obviously the Biden stimulus package did not include a lot of the corporate incentives that were in the first package. But we've seen as we give people increased SNAP benefits, that money goes directly into the pockets of store owners and farmers in this country. So, you know, it's not, I mean, when we give stimulus to people who don't have any money, they don't put it in offshore bank accounts in the Bahamas.
That's correct.
They spend it.
And they don't cut jobs like Verizon did.
Dominic in Grand Coteau. Dominic, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you.
Good morning, folks. You know, the issue of why Republican politicians cannot acknowledge Biden's victory is they would be exposing the lie that they, you know, they spoke up through the whole time. If they say that he won, then that means they were lying to their constituents, and they won't get reelected. And this Georgia thing is just another tactic to reinforce that lie. It's a vicious cycle, and these people, these Republicans, are just out of control.
Well, the action in Georgia, cause and effect, I don't think there's any doubt, Susan, that this was precipitated by the election in Georgia. And even though some of these Republicans stood tall during that time, including the governor, he basically said Trump was a liar. But at the same time, he signed that bill.
Yes, he did.
So at what point do you have to put politics aside and do the right thing, even if it means costing your phony baloney job as governor of a great state?
Yeah, I mean, even the attorney that was filing all those lawsuits had to admit that she lied, which, I mean, because of course it took her getting sued for her to admit that she lied. And so she's like, oh, but no reasonable person would believe any of this stuff. And it's like, I'm
Wasn't
sorry.
Wasn't that the craziest argument you ever heard in your life?
Well, you know, I'm an attorney, and I'm pretty sure I wouldn't want to claim a Rule 11 violation to get myself out of a defamation lawsuit. But
that's a unique argument.
It is a very unique argument.
And a listener does note, Tom, as well, that we do have a recent history of an election being perhaps stolen in the U.S., and that was 2000 when the U.S. Supreme Court on a 5-4 vote stopped a recount in Florida, which would have given Albert Arnold Gore the victory over George Bush, most likely. And Al Gore lost by 537 votes. The Supreme Court stopped the recount, and he won the election, George Bush did, by the scantest of margins, 271 to 267 in the Electoral College, despite losing the overall vote by more than a half million votes.
Well, you can go back to 1960. Presidential election.
Well, that's true, too, but that would have taken two states because Kennedy won pretty handsomely in the Electoral College. That would have taken both Illinois and Texas to swing the other way, and you'd have to prove fraud in both of those states. And even Richard Milhouse Nixon
wouldn't take that on.
No, and Nixon, Trump has managed to make Nixon look like a patriot and a statesman. Nixon said he did it for the good of the country, and you know what? I believe that there was part of that. Part of it also was that he knew that it probably wouldn't work well for him long term. But 2 years later, he ran for governor of California, got swamped by Pat Brown, and in 1968, Dick Nixon came back. He came back. We'll talk more. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Still time to get in. Tom Aswell and Susan East Nelson. And I was 10 in 1968. Tom, you were probably already registered to vote, but I do remember polling my fourth and fifth grade class at St. Patrick's Elementary School in North Little Rock, Arkansas, 1921 Maple Street, by the way. And the tally was 10 for Wallace, 10 for Humphrey, 10 for Nixon. 10, 10, and 10. Wallace carried Louisiana and Arkansas and Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia. He carried Georgia. George Wallace carried Georgia. How about that?
About that.
But he lost the election, but he was a third-party candidate who actually got some mojo in the South, and Richard Nixon won the election in the Electoral College handsomely, but he barely won, barely by about 100,000 votes over LSU graduate Hubert Horatio Humphrey. Right. Who did you vote for in 68?
That's an interesting story. In 1968, I was a student at Louisiana Tech, and my English professor was Robert Snyder. I don't know if you ever knew him or not. Mm-hmm. He was on the State Library Board. But Robert Snyder was a big George Wallace fan, and we both voted in the same precinct. So on election day, now I was a Nixon supporter, and on election day, I was lined up to go in, and Robert Snyder, my professor, was coming out of the voting booth. that I was going into. I went on in, I voted. I came out, he's standing there waiting for me. He says, well, how did you vote? And I needed an A in that class. And I told him, I said, well, I went in and I felt for the warm key, and I found, and it was George Wallace, so I voted for George Wallace.
You lied.
I lied. I told him I felt for the warm key. And he lost every test I turned in after that, and he would announce to the class, I lost your test, but I remember you made an A. That's a true story.
Okay. Henry at the Country Club. Henry, you're on with Susan and Tom. Hi, Henry.
Hello, Mr. Jim. Hello, Miss Susan. Hello, Mr. Tom. I hope y'all had a happy Easter, happy Passover, and happy everything else.
Ate lunch at your place.
There you go. You know, I was blown away by Mr. Tom, but, you know, sometimes the end does justify the means, so you do what you got to do in that case. Miss Susan was complimenting Senator Cassidy a few minutes ago. And I agree with that vote that he made to convict Trump. But all three of y'all remember very well that up until Election Day, the sun rose and set with Donald Trump as far as Cassidy's concerned.
All right, that is true. So should he be remembered for that or for his vote to convict and his statement that the election was fair and square? By the way, saying this with the comfort of a 6-year term.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think he realized there was a lot of folks who in his district, I think a lot of people in his district sent him letters and phone calls and things like that here in Baton Rouge, I know for sure. And throughout the state had said, you know, this is important. And I think he listened. I mean, I don't fault
All
him
right.
for that.
We do need to get in the LSU material, and some folks have been saying, when are you going to get to it? Well, tomorrow we'll have Mike Martin, the former chancellor, on. But Thursday there is a hearing scheduled at the Capitol. King Alexander is not invited, but Ed Orgeron and Scott Woodward are. And this could shed some light, particularly on the Gloria Scott situation, the security worker at the Superdome who says she was propositioned and harassed by Darius Geis, LSU star running back, in the crudest of ways in 2017, says that Coach O actually called her with people in the room, a conversation that Coach O, through a spokesman at the university, originally said didn't happen and now says he doesn't remember happening. Today in the Advocate, a column from Scott Rabelais, a fine sports writer, but he says the truth could be somewhere in the middle. I don't know how the truth is in the middle here. One of them is lying, Tom, as well.
He either did or he didn't.
He either did or he didn't. The truth is not in the middle here. And if he is lying, Coach O should be fired with cause, no buyout, just goodbye. If he's telling the truth, he should be forgiven, and perhaps he is a victim if he is telling the truth. But right now, most people were moved and thought that Ms. Scott was telling the truth. Your impression?
You know, I listened to her testimony, and it was heart-wrenching to hear her story. And what reason would she have to lie? I mean, there's no gain for her in this situation. I mean, you don't take down the beloved LSU coach, you know, and enjoy it, right? I mean, this is not something that's like on her list of things to do, right? So I think, you know, it's very plausible that conversation did happen. Whether or not he remembers it or not, you know, I'm not inside of his mind. But one of the things that really struck me about that committee meeting was that every person to a T said, you know, I have a grandmother and I'm outraged by this. You shouldn't need to have a grandmother to be outraged by this.
No.
You should be outraged that this behavior happened and that, you know, it went unchecked like this for so long.
And if he made that call, he remembers it. There's no way he could forget that. That's too serious a charge.
Yeah.
Well, either it's one way or the other.
Yeah.
And he should take a polygraph test as well. Now, those are not admissible in court, but the reason I believe more than anything else Anita Hill and I think Clarence Thomas was lying is that she took a polygraph test and passed, and he declined to take one.
Right. Will he be under oath?
He will be under oath.
In the legislature, okay. You sign a card that says everything right, you're okay. saying. I mean, okay. That's what I don't thought. Know that the, I mean, it's not perjury in the, I mean, yeah, I exactly. You, I was even, like, I don't think, I've never
seen.
Even
if he tells the biggest whopper of whoppers, yeah. he's not going to be charged yeah, exactly. with perjury. We yeah. know
right.
that.
Exactly.
But it could cost him his job.
Yeah.
And this is serious business. This is the issue of the day. And Coach O has a history. He was had restraining orders against him 30 years ago in Miami from a girlfriend.
Yep.
And he said the Geis was a troubled young man, but he played him in that bowl game. Geis starred, but LSU still lost to Notre Dame. I'm sure now, in retrospect, he probably wishes he had suspended him, Tom.
He probably does, but LSU has a long, storied history of CYA. Whether it's a Dutch engineer over the Katrina pilings, the Corps
right,
of Engineers,
as you wrote in
or Mark Hatfield, I mean, Hatfield, Stephen Hatfield,
the anthrax suspect,
or Teresa Buchanan, or what have you. It has a, LSU has a long history established of covering these things up and putting the best face forward, and it's just deplorable.
Well, and also, Teresa Buchanan, a tenured female professor, is fired for using profanity in the classroom, and yet Kevin Cope said, what about the football coach? What about the basketball coach?
Exactly.
Katie Ann McDonald, track star. I'm sure you've never heard one of your track coaches, never heard them use any profanity at all. How can you fire a person for using profanity in the classroom?
She was expendable.
Yeah, that's
and
I was going to say, it was pretext,
time,
that's
yeah.
why.
Yeah. Leslie Edwin Miles, the football coach, was at Bayou Bash saying, we're going to beat effing
right,
Alabama.
Right.
And he didn't say effing. He used
right.
the word
that's correct.
With thousands of people present who were hanging on every word. And you know what? He got cheered mightily. He was not fired. Teresa Buchanan was. And now we know that Les Miles insisted that his office be filled with pretty blondes with ample cleavage. He was accused of sexual harassment, actually reached a settlement with one of those accusing
Correct.
Him, yep. and LSU covered it up. Tom Aswell, why didn't Louisiana Voice get this story?
Louisiana Voice has not historically covered LSU like it should. I'll have to take the heat for
well,
that.
Well, The Advocate and Tiger Rag and many others have not covered LSU like it should either.
But this stuff has been going on in every facet of Louisiana for decades. I mean, if you go back to the legislature back in the 80s, if you go back to when I was 14 years old, 14, mm-hmm. as a Senate page, I had my behind slapped.
By a lawmaker?
By a lawmaker.
Can you name that
on
lawmaker?
The floor. It's been a long time. I cannot name that
you
lawmaker.
You cannot? Now, Susan.
It was a big deal. Like, we had to wear navy blue skirts. We had to dress a certain way. And it was a culture. It was absolutely a culture.
And what about all these statewide elected officials who put their girlfriends on the payroll?
Oh, sure. Of course. I mean, it's just standard practice. Go get my book, Bordello on the Bayou. It's based on that very thing.
Cover those things, yeah. But my friend and legal analyst Mike Wolf, who's an erudite man, the libertarian, he believes that if this is consensual, then what's the big deal? But can it be consensual when it involves an employer and an employee in a state government setting?
No, that's an inappropriate relationship.
It's a power dynamic.
In every definition of it.
Anyone in position of authority over someone else, the sexual relationship cannot be consensual by definition.
And the same would be true if it were a female.
Absolutely.
And a male.
Yep.
I remember Leo Honeycutt being on this show many years ago and saying that he was sexually harassed by a female when he was at Channel 2. That's what Leo says. And Leo, as far as I know, is a man of honor and integrity. But he should have probably said something at the time. And that's the question a listener asked, Susan, is that some of these allegations, they creep up years and years later. People's memories fade. Why don't people come forward more often at the moment?
Well, I think, you know, particularly if you're in a culture that's all around you and you're not, I mean, you want to work for LSU football or you want to be in politics. And so you just keep your mouth shut and keep your head down and let it go. And then you don't realize just how eroding that culture is until years later.
Plus, at the time it happens, you don't have the support base
right.
for a complaint that you have today.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's see what happens Thursday. Darius Guy should be on that list, too, though. It would be nice if he testified.
I don't know that the legislature has subpoena powers for that.
Okay, well, First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. We'll be back tomorrow with former Chancellor Mike Martin. Until then, stay tuned.